Lenny Curry steps down as Florida GOP chair as he considers a run for Jacksonville mayor. A new poll shows former Governor Charlie Crist leading current Governor Rick Scott. And Jacksonville police respond to a rash of drug-related shootings. Those are some of the stories making headlines this week. Good morning. Live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Happy Friday, and thanks for tuning in. I'm Karen Fagans, in this morning for Melissa Ross. Just ahead, we'll discuss all of the week's top stories with our media roundtable. Also this morning, Emmy-winning journalist Armin Katayan joins us for a conversation before taking part in Jacksonville University's commencement ceremonies. Then later, beautiful music in a beautiful location. We'll tell you everything you need to know about the Amelia Island Chamber Music Festival. That's all coming up this morning on First Coast Connect. But first this hour, it's Friday, and so as we do every Friday, we welcome our Media Roundtable Week in Review. Joining us to discuss this week's top news are Larry Hannon, a reporter for the Florida Times-Union. Good morning.
Good to be here.
A.G. Gankarski, the Fighting Words columnist for Folio Weekly.
Hi, Karen.
Hey. And Fred Matthews, who blogs at Examiner.com. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
And we are going to begin today with the political drama in the 2015 mayoral race. Powerful fundraiser Peter Rummel, who backed Jacksonville Mayor Alvin Brown in the last election, broke very publicly from the mayor this week, telling the editorial board of the Florida Times-Union, quote, he doesn't know how to manage, he has no courage, he's wimped out. Rummel says he's going to throw his support behind Lenny Curry, who told Florida Republican Party leaders on Thursday that he was stepping down as state chair. Our question to callers this morning, what effect do you think Rummel's decision and his words about Mayor Alvin Brown will have on this race? You can give us a call at 549-2937, email the program, firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, or send me a tweet at Karen Fagans. And Larry, we'll start with you. The Times Union had this story this weekend. What has the reader response been to Rummel's comments about Mayor Alvin Brown?
Karen, it's been all over the map. I mean, you've got some people who are saying, well, why'd you back him in 2011? You've got some people who don't understand why Rummel would back Lenny Curry. You've got supporters of Brown who are just basically standing by their man. I think we just don't know how this race is going to shake up yet.
A.G. Gankarski, how do you think Jacksonville residents will respond to Lenny Curry as a potential candidate for mayor?
I think he's going to do really well, and I'll tell you why. One of the interesting things about the Times-Union story was toward the end where Rummel discussed the human rights ordinance, which is something that I think people in the urban core, people in the gay and lesbian bisexual community expected that Brown would get behind. They had expected him to lead the Democratic Party and make sure that passed in one form or another. It did not happen. Lenny Curry is actually friendly to that amendment, as is Rummel. So you're going to see an inversion of the political dynamic where you've got basically a socially conservative Democrat who's going to have a Republican who is well-funded running to the left of him socially on one key issue. So I think that's going to pay off at the polls. Remember that Brown won by 1,600 votes against a very weak candidate. So, you know, his election was, I don't want to say an accident, but improbable. So, you know, when Rummel comes out and says this, Rummel being the person who vetted him, you know, back a couple of years ago, it's a really significant development.
And there always is that, once you've been burned, you have almost more of a motivation. And there is a feeling of, and I think Rummel's comments play this out, of you throw your support to an unlikely candidate and then you feel he hasn't lived up to the promise. Now you're even more upset than if you hadn't gone down that path in the first place.
And I should mention Tim Givens from the Jacksonville Business Journal joining us on the roundtable. Fred Matthews, Peter Rummel, a very powerful political figure in Jacksonville. What do you think it will mean for Lenny Curry to have his support and the support of a lot of his very wealthy friends?
I think it means money. At this point, it doesn't mean very much else. Though Lenny Curry may be well-known within political circles, he's not well-known within voting circles. He certainly is not going to be well-supported among the majority of Democrats who are going to look at him as simply being another right-wing candidate who wants to have business in play. Peter Rummel's endorsement, although it makes good headlines, and it's a great endorsement, it's certainly going to give him some footing. It apparently played a little bit in Jim Overton's decision not to run. How will it play in the sheriff's decision to run or not in this game? I think John Rutherford, sheriff of Duval County, was probably looking at somebody like Rutherford to fund his campaign. Will he back out of the race simply because Lenny Curry comes into the race with no what he's going to do. And, of course, we've got the bigger backdrop. A black Baptist Democrat on the no-tax pledge is running against the Republican Party, who is for a tax increase across the board. They're going to carry this. How is that going to play with them? And that's going to be the thing that we look at coming up. Do you want the tax increase that the Republicans say they're always against, but now they're for? And again, we don't have a proposal from the city council on pension reform. The mayor has proposed it. Good or bad, he's proposed it. He's going to negotiate it. These are the backdrops that we're looking at over the next 11 months.
Let me get the phone number in here one more time. We're discussing the 2015 mayoral race. You can join the conversation by giving us a call at 549-2937. Larry Hannon.
The key to this race could turn out to be what I've dubbed the Audrey Moran Democrats, the people who voted for Audrey Moran in the first round in the last election and then broke for Alvin Brown the second time because they didn't like Mike Hogan and they decided to give Brown a chance. A lot of them are socially liberal. They're unhappy at Brown for the way he sort of abandoned them on the human rights ordinance. And I really think those are the voters more than any others that are in play right now.
I think it will also probably make a difference. I mean, the issue in the last race was there were a lot of candidates, and so constituencies were split. Tim Gibbons, do you see the Republican Party trying to prevent that from happening this time?
I think that's one of the reasons that Romo actually did the interview he did. It was basically a way of scaring out a lot of the other people who might have been thinking about running. By giving his imprimatur early, it kind of winnowed out some of those people who might otherwise have split the vote.
There's a lot we don't know about Lenny Curry, but the one thing we do know, because he's the chairman of the Republican Party of Florida, is the man can raise money like it's no one's business. Combine him with Peter Rummel, there's just not going to be a lot of resources left for other candidates who want to challenge Brown.
A.G. Gankarski, do you think that many voters in Jacksonville are even paying attention to the politics of the 2015 mayoral race at this point?
Not at this point, but it's actually in Curry's advantage because he can do a slow build. I mean, what the local Republican Party wants to create is the next John Delaney. And I think what you're going to see out of Curry as this develops is an evolution into the Delaney model, you know, good government, pro-business, you know, golden mean on social issues. I think that's going to be tough to beat. And I think Rummel actually gave him time to develop a campaign, develop a network, and get the name recognition he's going to need.
But Curry has never run for public office before, and there's always that danger. That's just because you can raise money, just because you're a prominent figure in political circles, doesn't mean once you hit the street and start looking for votes, you're going to be able to connect. That's always
and on the other hand, neither had Alvin. So.
Yeah, and Alvin turned out to do that very well.
But now Alvin Brown has the power of the incumbency, which is extremely powerful, and he has been politically very popular.
Yes, I mean he's still got 60% approval ratings. While there's a lot of grumbling about him behind the scenes, the average person on the street thinks he's done a good job, and Lenny Curry is going to have to make his case against that.
And like AG said, the tax increase issue becomes such an interesting one where you have to run to a Democrat's left to make the argument that we should raise taxes for downtown. Well, okay, that's a really weird argument for Lenny Curry to make.
And of course, there is the Shad Khan factor. The mayor has made no secret about his backing of the billionaires' programs with the as far as Jaguars are concerned and what they try to do. I mean, we can see the stadium going up every day. We see thousands of people that are going to be going to that stadium this fall.
I just love that they call it construction.
Well, that's what it is. I mean, that's make no bones about it. So that's a big deal. And the mayor is no shrinking violet in raising money. Remember, the entire state of Florida is going to be looking at Jacksonville to support this first Democratic mayor we've had in almost 20 years. He has both those connections in the state and, of course, his nationwide connections that roll through the Clinton Clinton family that'll be in there. So it's going to be a big race, make no doubt about raising money. But who is it actually going to be on the Republican side? Are they going to be able to get those other two potential candidates to step aside? We'll see what the sheriff does. And, of course, there's Bill Gulliford. We've got to see what he's going to do. I suspect nothing's going to happen with him until after the new council president is sworn in.
And don't forget Bill Bishop. He's running, too.
Ah, yes.
It is going to be interesting. I'm told that the next filing period should have interesting information about who's contributing and what they're contributing to Brown. So.
Yep. Yep.
And we do have a caller on the line this morning. Terry from Mandarin is calling to talk about this race. Go ahead, Terry. What is your question?
Hi. I guess my question is, who was the Democratic bozo that voted against the gay rights initiative. If that was the current mayor, who everyone's talking about as this great Democrat, we need to get him out of there.
All right, thank you for that. Thank you for that comment, Terry.
There were several Democratic councilmen who voted against the human rights ordinance.
I really thought you were going to say several Democratic bozos.
This isn't Fox News.
And the mayor obviously doesn't have a vote on council, but he was conspicuous in never commenting on it as at all, and most people believe he wanted it to die. So
yeah, I mean,
Johnny Gaffney flipped at the end on it.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. That was the key vote and the surprising vote for everybody. In that Dr. Gaffney switched at the last minute, everybody assumed that he would vote for it. Then all of a sudden, you know, he's on the other side. So, the mayor simply didn't do anything. He didn't have to do anything with it, and he didn't. So,
well, he didn't comment on it
anybody.
I was covering the mayor's office at the time, and it was one of those constant questions, and he just utterly refused to take
the
stand.
The bill failed, but he never got to the mayor, so he didn't have to do anything with it.
Well, we're going to stick with the politics of elections, but move on to state politics now. Also this week, a new Quinnipiac poll shows Democratic gubernatorial candidate Charlie Crist continues to hold a hefty lead over incumbent Republican Rick Scott. Crist was elected governor in 2006 as a Republican, of course. He later left the party. He leads Scott by a margin of 48% to 38%. And the question here, is it this likability factor? Charlie Crist has always been able to connect with voters in a way. Is that what's showing up in these polls?
Charlie Crist is one of the best retail politicians I've ever seen. He can work a room like nobody's business. Rick Scott is one of the worst retail politicians I've ever seen in my life. And we spent the last year kind of talking about, well, does anyone really trust Charlie Crist? We've kind of lost track of the fact that Rick Scott has never been popular. I mean, even when he was first elected, his approval ratings have almost never been above 40%. And to a certain extent, both of these candidates are trying to make it a referendum on the other one. But Rick Scott is the incumbent governor right now. And even in Republican circles, there's a lot of people who don't really like him.
Crist does particularly well with women voters and independents, which are good constituencies to have on your side. I want to give the number again at 549-2937. That's 549-2937 if you would like to join the conversation about the latest polling in the gubernatorial race in Florida. AG, what do you think about what these early polls are telling us?
I think they're more of a measure of, you know, Scott standing than anything really significant. I don't think we've seen the race really develop yet. I think Scott's got some tricks up his sleeve and, probably tighten up toward the end. We might be seeing Chris's high water mark right now in terms of the polling, actually. That's something to consider also, because we're still a little bit far out from the election.
There's also the question of who actually goes to the polls. I mean, one of the reasons Scott won in 2010 is that Democrats and independents didn't vote in very high levels that year. We're seeing the same thing with polling this year, where Republicans are saying we're definitely going to the polls, and Democrats are like, maybe we'll go, maybe we won't.
That leads to my favorite semi-conspiracy theory of the medical marijuana issue, in part being a way to drive Chris-friendly voters to the polls. And that,
if they remember.
That
was today?
There was something on 538.com that said that there was really no correlation between medical marijuana initiatives being on the ballot and voters coming out to the polls. So that's something that, while it seems like we have mobilized voters for Crist, it remains to be seen whether it will happen here, because it really hasn't happened throughout the country.
We've seen Governor Scott trying to use Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, against Charlie Crist. Fred, do you think that that is an effective tactic, or might that backfire on Scott?
Well, it seemed to backfire a bit on him in a visit to a senior citizen home earlier this week, where it was supposed to be one of those opportunities that was set up by his staff, where you go visit the seniors and you tell them about Medicare and how bad it's treating him. And
they didn't vet
the group. Nobody, everybody in the group says, "Well, I'm doing fine. I haven't had any problems with it. It's doing fine by me." Seniors have to do something. The governor was taken aback by that, and the fact is that it is. I mean, it is there. The bigger problem that he's got with the medical issue is the fact that Florida has opted out of the Medicaid system, that is left a whole bunch of folks in a gap of not being able to get care, simply because they want to put a thumb in the eye of Obamacare, which is the law of the land. It's okay to be political, but it's another thing when you begin to hurt your constituents all over the state. And I think that, you know, we're in a process, a land here where folks are going to recognize that and simply not going to play well here. The governor's got to come up with something else. I mean, he's running commercials that talk about how poor he was and all of that. Well, you ran that 4 years ago. I mean, what are you not poor now? And you don't live in public housing anymore. And, you know, come on.
I guess it is public housing in a way. The governor's mansion.
Grief. I mean, very come different. On. You're not any. Well, he is in public. You're right. I'm sorry. He does live in public housing sometime. But come on. I mean, you've got to tell us something new. And those 700,000 jobs he was supposed to get, I mean, we got 500,000 of them. But how much are actually, you know, according to what you've done?
Mm-hmm. If you're joining us right now, our media roundtable today, Tim Gibbons from the Jacksonville Business Journal, Larry Hannon, a reporter for the Florida Times Union, also A.G. Gankarski from Folio Weekly, and Fred Matthews, who blogs at examiner.com. And you can always join the conversation by calling us at 549-2937. Keith in Mandarin called in this morning. Good morning, Keith. How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Doing fine.
I think the general public is absolutely tired of politics and these elections years in advance. And I think that the people want the office holders to do their job, and then they can decide in a couple months before the election whether they've done a good job or whether they haven't.
So you think we're talking about this too early? Is that the complaint?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Thank you for that comment, Keith. We're going to go now to Joe on the South Side. Good morning, Joe. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. What's your question or comment?
My question is, if Charlie Crist wins the election, is he going to impose a state income tax for the state of Florida?
I haven't heard that. Tim, have you heard anything about that?
I have not, and I would...
That's not going to happen. Yeah. That's the fourth or fifth rail of Florida politics. There's no politician is ever going to suggest income tax.
You would have to go through the legislature, if I'm correct. So, and there's not a snowball's chance in more places.
I mean, the nastiest thing you can say about Charlie Crist is an opportunist who does what it takes to get elected. That's not a way to get elected in the state of Florida.
Certainly not. We're getting lots of calls now. We're going to go to John, who is a state corrections officer. John, you must have an interest in this election.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I'm bringing home $30, $33 bi-weekly less than I'm worth back in 2006. I'm being sick with my heart that I've earned from working Christmases and Thanksgivings. And, I think just like most state employees, we're big Charlie Crist supporters. He never really did too much for state employees, but he never did anything to us either.
So you have not been happy with the current administration?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. And just working for DOC, we're very short staffed. I've seen officers' safety being put in jeopardy every day due to budget cuts and... just not having more officers, you know.
All right.
We probably had more assaults and more deaths in Florida as far as correctional officers go under Rick Scott's administration than I could ever remember under any other previous administration. And I've been with them for over 25 years.
All right. Thank you, John. This gets back to what you were talking about, AG. That wasn't exactly a ringing endorsement for Charlie Crist, but he's certainly not happy with Rick Scott.
Right. And, you know, regarding his call, I mean, wages staying the same for close to a decade. I mean, we're seeing that not just in the prison industry, but in private industry. We've seen wages flatline and stagnate. The cost of living goes up. The currency is worth less each passing year. So, I mean, that's where you're seeing the corners being cut in the correctional industry. But, you know, people said when Scott was running, they wanted government run like a business. Well, that's what they got.
I think it was Larry who said that this was, basically wanted to be a referendum on the other guy. And that caller sounded exactly like that. The, yeah, Crist, okay, fine, whatever. But, you know, kick the bum out sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're going to go to one more call on this topic. Bob from Palatka. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. I just wanted to say that to your commentator who said that Crist has reached a high watermark that he better check outside because Crist, rather Governor Scott has run more commercials funded by God knows who than Viagra and Cialis put together. Someone says around $30 million worth of commercials so far, making him a saint and making Governor Crisk the villain and blaming Governor Crisk for everything that was brought about by the Bush administration. And I just, all I know is that I'm a government employee, and I do not know one government employee that will support Governor Scott. They will support Governor Crisp, and when the Governor Scott's make a nations with the Medicaid cutting it back, you're going to see hospitals closing all over the state, because unfortunately Medicaid has gotten to be a major funder of the public hospital and private hospital system.
All right, Bob, thank you very much for that call.
That $30 million, by the way, is going to turn into $300 million by the end of this year.
Yeah, we're going to be sick of these ads.
Mm-hmm. you haven't seen anything yet on either side.
Yep. 7 months and counting.
All right. Also making headlines this week. On that happy note, we'll move on. 33 people shot and 7 killed in Jacksonville in the month of April. Terrible statistics. The spike in shootings has prompted the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office to take action, increasing patrols in high-crime areas. Again, you can join our discussion. The number is 549-2937. Councilwoman Denise Lee compared what is happening in her district to the Wild West. She's going to be meeting with the sheriff on Monday. The sheriff's office, for its part, says the crimes are mostly drug-related, and if you're not doing drugs or hanging out with people who are selling drugs, that you're probably okay. Thoughts?
Well, I read that statement. It was one of those, okay. That didn't exactly make me feel better. Like, well, okay, that's fine. It's just the drug dealers. It seemed an odd approach to basically go, drug dealers, you know.
Even then, though, last year there weren't nearly as many, you know, drug users getting killed as at this time this year. So, we're seeing crime drop nationwide. So the question of why we're suddenly seeing this increase in shootings in Jacksonville is kind of mystifying.
Mm-hmm. It's not really mystifying. It's a turf war. I mean, this happens periodically. Every 2 or 3 years, you see the surge in drug-related crimes. And, you know, really, if you want to be next level about it, you can lay it at the feet of prohibitionist policies. If we had more responsible policies regarding marijuana and other drugs, we wouldn't have these turf wars. We wouldn't have these dead bodies in Jacksonville streets year after year for no particular reason.
Beer distributors are not out there in the streets shooting each other.
No,
not yet.
The street-level distributors are, though.
Well, and it also tells the tale of where they are, where the concentration of the leaders of these gangs, and they are now gangs. 20 years ago, we argued that we didn't have gangs, we weren't getting any, but we have them now. They are out there battling. The discussions are being had on Facebook and on Instagram, where some of the pictures are showing up. This is real, and it's lit, and it's live, folks. And we've got to, and summer hasn't even begun.
Yeah, it's also very concerning. Two police-involved shootings. Officers are really in danger in this situation.
Well, they are, because these people have these people have no regard for anybody. A cop is just another person with a gun, and of course, the sheriff has got to look in his own department and make sure that all of his people are clean, because a lot of these things could not be facilitated in zip code 32209, which, by the way, has no grocery store. There's no grocery store in 32209, if you look at it.
Food desert.
Food desert. No businesses of any consequence except for convenience stores, fast food places, and a couple of dollar stores. Nothing there. Folks have to go out everywhere to get everything they want. These are all the conditions that are ripe for this kind of criminal activity to develop, and also make sure you have a conclave where everybody stays quiet.
We're going to take a call quickly from Grover. Grover, good morning.
Yeah, how you doing this morning?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. A little surprised when I went outside. The temperature is dropping, and we're getting a northeaster. Mm.
Yeah, it's going to be a rainy day, that's for sure. Do you have a comment about what we're discussing this morning?
Well, Governor Scott, if I'm not mistaken, pays $28 a month for his entire family for health insurance. So I don't think he'd be concerned at all with the affordable health care or any health care for anyone in the state of Florida.
All right. Thank you for that comment.
He's also a billionaire that helps with healthcare costs as well.
Many things, actually.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to move on to our final topic. Also making news, the Springfield candy shop Sweet Pete's is moving downtown to the Seminole Club. Marcus Lemonis, the star of CNBC's The Prophet, told the Business Journal this week that he has a verbal agreement to acquire the Hogan Street property near City Hall. Of course, he's been helping out Sweet Pete's and trying to make it a profitable company. Tim Gibbons, this is an interesting story. Is this good news for downtown?
It should be. It's arguably, you know, not good news for Springfield because it kind of was a tourism sort of draw there. But the big push downtown is you need retail. And typically the statement is you can't have retail until you have residential. This is retail moving down by Hemming Plaza. It's a good location. Lemonis has been talking about bringing in, I think it was two other businesses that he has ownership stakes in. It's going to be a little foodie, little, you know, historic place there right next to City Hall.
And it's such a cool building. Have you guys seen the pictures of inside?
It has a basketball court.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It used to be, that was a private club for many years. That's the name Seminole Club. The last owner I remember was, I think, Doug Milne purchased that some years ago to try to save it. But it is a historical building of the Southern elite.
The second oldest social club in the city.
It is a great building. And it gets kind of unique. The only thing I would be concerned about is just, you know, parking. But, you know, I guess you can work that out. That's why the Skyway is there. You can take it, get off the Skyway and walk in.
AG, we should point out this is near City Hall, kind of near Hemming Plaza, which they're also trying to bring back in a way. Do you think that having some retail in that area will help that effort?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a multiplier effect. You get one thriving business down there, you can get five more synergizing off of it. We can see what happens in, you know, the Five Points area right now, the Park and King area, that kind of development. Those places were ghost towns a few years ago. Now King Street, you know, you've got so much vitality on there. It's one of the most thriving strips in the city. And, you know, it's all because of synergy of one or two businesses that were the trailblazers.
And if you look at something like a Sweet Pete and other food-related businesses, and Chamblin's there across from Hemming, it does start bringing together a somewhat of a critical mass of those sort of things.
All right. I know that this isn't the biggest story of the week, but I think we do have to hit on the Jameis Winston story. Just talk about it a little bit. Florida State University quarterback and Heisman Trophy winner Jameis Winston cited this week for allegedly stealing seafood from a Tallahassee Publix. He says that he forgot to pay.
Happens to me all the time.
How do you walk out of a store and forget to pay?
The cash register is right there by the front door. It should be a dead giveaway.
They have little lights and stuff over and everything. The interesting thing to me about this story is I saw it first on Twitter, and Twitter just went... it was a fun day on Twitter.
It was all over social media.
Yeah, one thing that amused me is I saw something on ESPN.com yesterday that said Winston's stock dropping with NFL scouts. Well, he's got another year of football. If he wins a second Heisman Trophy in the national championship, his stock's going to go back up. I mean, this is sort of a fun little story to mock, but at the end of the day, it's not as certainly not as serious as the previous allegations against him, and it's not going to affect his draft status.
When I saw that headline, there was a certain amount of, wait, this is causing his stock to drop? Okay.
Right.
I mean, really, though, you got to look at it. You've got a player who's made millions of dollars for Florida State University, the ACC, the NCAA, and he's having to scrap for food like that. I mean, there's something wrong with the NCAA compensation model for athletes in revenue sports. There is no reason that he should have to do that for food.
And that is the issue at hand that we have to face. Whether we like it or not, this kind of thing should not occur. If I've got my card, I'm going to go up there and swipe it. If I don't have enough money, I got to deal with it. Despite all the publicity, despite all that's going on, we have a $1 million player that you know, forgot to pay for crab legs. Come on, something is going on here. Unfortunately for this young man, if he doesn't have a great season again going into this football season, his stock is going to drop. And other factors, these folks with this lawsuit and this Henning are not going to stop until they get some blood from out of Jameis Winston or Florida State.
I understand what you are saying, but there are a lot of poor college students who don't who don't walk out of Publix without paying for their food. Yeah. We're going to go now to Joan downtown. Joan, what is your comment? Good morning, Joan.
Oh, yes. Good morning. I just think it's a shame. It really is a sad, sad situation. I don't know what to say about this. It's just so, so, so sad, and it's so pathetic.
Are you an FSU fan?
Yes, well, I used to be. I can't support them the way I used to. I just can't do that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Joan.
I mean, the simple fact is he could have gotten someone to buy that. It's Jameis Winston at FSU. I mean, I think there's plenty of people who would be happy to share their crab legs
Wouldn't
with
that
him.
Be a controversy, too, though?
That would be a violation of NCAA bylaws.
Yeah. Put somebody in jail for that.
There you go, Larry, trying to get people arrested.
Yeah, that's what I do. I am the court's reporter.
Fight the power, Larry.
All right, finally this week, it's our roundup of the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous this week here in the Sunshine State. Of course, there's never a shortage of material. Here it is now, only in Florida. Only in Florida does a state senator file an amendment to help prepare for the zombie apocalypse, if I could say the word. Senator Dwight Bullard from Miami filed an amendment to a concealed weapons bill that's headed for the Senate floor, which would allow people to carry their weapons without a concealed weapons permit when mandatory evacuations are ordered. So the bill itself is opposed by a lot of Democrats, but the gun lobby argues that it's needed because people evacuating shouldn't have to leave their guns at home. So Bullard, I think tongue-in-cheek, created an amendment to the bill, said an act related to the zombie apocalypse. The Senate briefly took up the bill on Wednesday, but postponed action without deciding the fate of the zombie amendment. So, unlike the zombies, it may truly be dead.
Ba-bum-bum.
Sorry, it's the best I could do.
You're laughing. You're laughing. Okay.
I'm not a comedian. I'm trying here. Only in Florida does a driver take his quest to get people to hang up and drive into his own hands. Jason Humphreys of Sefner operated a cell phone jammer in his Toyota Highlander during his daily commute for as long as 2 years before the U.S. Federal Communications Commission and the local sheriff were able to track him down. He says he was using it to keep people from talking on their cell phones while driving. So the FCC points out that it could also prevent commuters from calling 911 in an emergency or could disrupt communications from safety agencies. They weren't very happy, and he's facing $48,000 in fines.
They found this guy, BS, the cell phone company basically said our towers keep on going out every morning and every evening in this pattern. I'm imagining some engineer sitting there going, what the heck?
This guy just needs to get a life or at least a girlfriend. I mean,
or a cell phone.
Yeah.
The can you hear me now guy is really upset with him. That's all I know.
Well, thank you so much. Please send us your Only in Florida nominations. And thanks, of course, to our media roundtable, Tim Gibbons from the Jacksonville Business Journal, Larry Hannon from the Times Union, A.G. Gankarski from Folio Weekly, and Fred Matthews from Examiner.com. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Karen.
Have a great weekend. All right.